T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Movement. It's a revolution, and I'm excited to be a small part of it.
Rich Campbell.
I'll get up with you, have some coffee.
Chicago Tribune Bears beat writer.
Everything that happened, every last word is in my notes.
Bringing you the latest from Hallis Hall.
We're in reset mode. We're not happy with what's happened the last 3 or 4 weeks. It's important to do everything we can to go 1-0 at Soldier Field Thursday night.
Asking hard-hitting questions.
What impressed you about Leonard Sack?
Rich Campbell with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
We're doing this like it's Bears Monday, the top of the hour brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. You want to sign a one-day contract with the Chicago Wolves or earn a $5,000 signing bonus? Visit ChicagoWolves.com for details. Then visit the Sprint store in Arlington Heights between 1 and 3 p.m. December 14th for your chance to win. Rich Campbell is on Twitter at Rich_Campbell. He is the Tribune Bears beat reporter, and he is on the Alpamonte Ford hotline. Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Did you have a nice holiday, Rich?
I did. We managed to get a Thanksgiving dinner at about 9:30 p.m. Eastern time after the game Thursday night. Came back, watched the game again, and still got Saturday with the family. So,
oh, good.
It is, if it's Bears season and it's Monday, it's a Bears Monday. So let's go.
So the kind of the big news, I guess, from the weekend that doesn't have to do with the game itself, because we've done a lot on the game, and we'll get to it too with you. But Adam Shaheen is now done for the season, and that is a statement in and of itself. But the fact that he just has not provided anything for this offense, and that you can just say, okay, Adam Shaheen is done, and it doesn't mean anything necessarily. Hell, they could be better with Jesper Horsted, is kind of a statement on where things are at, even at 6-6, is it not?
Yeah. I mean, if you want to get to the heart of their problems offensively, you have to look at the draft picks on the first and second, even third rounds that were acquired within the last 2 or 3 years to build this whole thing around Mitch, who obviously is in that group. And that whole group just collectively has not been good enough to get them even into the top half of the league offensively. And the Trubisky conversation is separate. Look at Shaheen as the 45th overall pick in that year's draft. And you could cite George Kittle as being taken later in the draft, and now every team in the league missed on him, but just take him out of it. Shaheen has not been the player that they have said he was going to be, this red zone target, this athlete who could, you know, get down the field and get yards after the catch. He just hasn't been anything that they touted him as being. And so this is headed towards being one of the bigger draft busts in Ryan Pace's resume, one that already includes Kevin White for injury reasons. With Shaheen, yeah, you know, we talked to Nagy about this yesterday, and he cited his durability issues, but Shaheen athletically has not been an NFL caliber athlete. And I think that's the biggest problem when you look at the developmental forecast for him and how he's failed to reach that. He'd be back next season. The Bears don't owe him any guaranteed money. He's got a dead cap number of about $700,000 as part of the prorated signing bonus. So that's all it would take to cut him. He's also a very low-cost player to bring back and have him compete, so we'll see where they end up. But quite obviously, Matt Nagy inherited this guy. He was not in the draft room and on board with the pick to begin with, and it would not be surprising at all if Matt took them a different direction at tight end.
Which of the positives from these last couple weeks of the last game, which are real? What matter?
I think we're going to have to wait until these next couple games to figure that out, because the degree of difficulty in the Bears' schedule the last part of November was so soft. It's about as soft as you could get. And I don't want to take anything away from what Mitch accomplished, you know, particularly on first down and after the pick against the Lions, because he did great. He really did great. But it's up to them to make it mean something. It's up to them for us after, let's say, the Green Bay game to go, you know what, that was a turning point, rather than, that was just a little uptick in a 6-10 or 7-9 season that really fell short of expectations overall. The one element that I was interested in talking to Nagy about yesterday is, what about the Mitch's timing and decision-making can be replicated? Because it's not necessarily just the Lions defense stinks and therefore Anthony Miller can win one-on-one, man-to-man, and Mitch can put it up to him.
Or yeah,
Mitch
they were in man,
Jesper
too.
Horsted. Right. Right, but Mitch has to make that decision, and he's got to make those throws. And theoretically, you should be able to repeat the way you see the field and the way you execute and the rhythm with which you do it. So let's see if he can do that against Dallas, which has a top-10 defense.
Is that kind of why Nagy seemed pretty excited about Mitch hitting David Montgomery as a third read and hitting, I think it was the Horsted throw, too, that was the third read in the play? It's the fact that he can get to those things or had gotten to those things can be the stuff you build on going forward.
Yeah, yeah. But and also, those are things that he hasn't been doing. So that's, in Nagy's mind, represents growth. That if Mitch is seeing the defense and whatever key he has to read to know if his first option is the preferred one, the most advantageous one, and if it's not there, get to two, get to three, that shows the progress and command of the offense. Of course, in order to get to two or three in the progression, you've got to have great pass protection. And the Bears did on those particular plays against the Lions. Now, the Lions, they stink defensively. And we've seen this offensive line get overmatched at times in the run game and as a pass blocking unit against better defenses. And this is where, against the Cowboys and against those Packers edge rushers, that the degree of difficulty increases. But yes, when you hear Nagy talking about the timing of decision, I think it's fair to infer that he hasn't been doing that. Certainly that matches what we've seen and the production to this point. And the more Mitch can do that and get comfortable with it and be more confident in it, the better off he'll be.
Can Anthony Miller play well without acting like an idiot all the time?
You mean just sort of the barking and chirping
all
after
of it.
Plays
all
and
of
things
it.
Like that?
You know, and yeah, especially man. For a guy that has had concentration issues and assignment issues, you know, get on to the next thing and be where you're supposed to be and shut up.
Yeah, I think Nagy was very clear about this when we asked him specifically about the delay of game penalty they took after his second 30-yard catch in the that game-winning drive where Mitch completed the two third and short balls to him. That one of the reasons they got delay of game is that Miller was getting subbed out for a bit, that big, heavy personnel group, but he was in the end zone dancing and barking and spinning the ball. And for everything you hear about Allen Robinson as an example or a mentor to Anthony Miller, that part has not rubbed off on him. And I think you wouldn't blame Robinson. You'd blame Miller, that he's got to follow that example of the pro who, you know, even if you signal for first down or something, you toss the ball back to the ref and you just go do it again. That every play doesn't need to be, you know, some production. And I'm with you. I think it's a reflection of Miller's maturity and how he still has to grow. And you see the production the last few weeks and you think, okay, harness that with this this element of act like you've been there before and stay on your details when you hear the coach continuing to talk about this, when you see instances of positives being immediately offset by a negative like this delay of game penalty, and just sharpen those details and play within the team concept, and he'll be better off for it.
Who should get the most credit for this team at the very least talking about their potential to make the playoffs, keeping things alive, understanding that they have to, you know, at least publicly put on a face of, well, this next one, just trying to go 1-0, that thing. Not from the coach's perspective, that each one of the 53 in there seem to have that in their brain.
Like, you're talking about why are they still alive, or why are they able to talk about this?
Yeah, I guess the ability to keep that focus. Who gets the credit for that?
Well, I think Nagy has done a really good job over his two seasons of keeping a team focused on a week-to-week basis. And I also think defensively that group has accomplished players that set the right tone, that you consistently see positive plays and that type of steadiness from guys like Kyle Fuller, you know, Danny Trevathan when he was healthy, Khalil Mack, Eddie Jackson. Those players, you see the passion from them consistently. You see production from them consistently. Defensively, they set the tone, and they've been a playoff caliber defense all season. Now, the offense sort of has its own problems going and have had to fight through that and took advantage of a soft middle of the schedule here. And Nagy, I think, takes the lead on that. We'll see how they come through this. I mean, the offense is going to have to score to keep pace with Dallas, Kansas City, Green Bay, Minnesota up in the dome. So I think we'll have a different feel for this as we go, one way or the other. If they continue to ascend and get some help, that the Vikings come back to them, all right, then it becomes that type of weekly focus. But if they don't, then that weekly focus sort of takes on a different meaning, mm-hmm. playing out the string when you don't have that carrot you're chasing. I think Nagy's done a good job of that overall. Credit has to start with him, but there are some defensive leaders, I think, that take the reins, and they get a lot of credit as well.
What does Akeem Hicks's return mean?
That's a good question, because if you look at the run defense, they've still been pretty darn good without him. So you wouldn't necessarily think that they go from, you know, fourth in the league in yards per carry to first in the league necessarily. But I do think from a matchup standpoint and a game planning standpoint, opposing offenses will have to treat the Bears differently because of the way Hicks pushes the pocket inside. And the first guy you think of as the benefactor is Khalil Mack, that you got to devote some resources and double teams to Hicks inside if he's at full strength, if he can extend his arms and push the pocket like we know him to be able to do, and that maybe Mack gets a few more one-on-ones and can wreak havoc that way. But the guys behind him, while they don't have that type of game-changing impact against the run, Roy Robertson Harris, Nick Williams, Bilal Nichols to a certain extent as well, those guys have done really well. It's been one of the deepest position groups on the Bears for years now. The position coach, Jay Rogers, deserves a lot of credit for what he's done with that group. And so, yeah, because they've been so good, how much better can they be? I'm not so sure that is where you'll see the impact, but it's matchup standpoint and just the bodies and the blocking fits the offense has to devote, that maybe Khalil, maybe Leonard Floyd get some better matchups that way.
Talking with Bears beat reporter Rich Campbell here on the Bernstein and McKnight show, as we do on every Monday, really, after Bears games. Now that you've had a couple of days to talk to people on the defensive side of things, Do we have a sense of why the Lions and David Blah were really a problem for them in the first half?
I think it had to do with just one, you know, Prince Amukamara mistake, where he thought he saw something on film that indicated a tendency in that 3rd and 10, you know, formationally and just a tendency of what they tried to do on a shorter route. And the Lions broke tendency and got him. Prince was pretty forthcoming with that afterward, that he tried to just, I don't even know if it was jump, but he tried to play just the in-cutting shorter route, and Galladay broke it off deep. So, okay, that one problem can be compartmentalized. And on the second one, the Bears had coverage busts. Again, it's communication in the secondary. It's everybody being in the proper zone. I looked at Eddie Jackson on one of those longer chunk completions on the second drive after a play was over, talking to other players, understanding that they had just coverage busts. And then after that, after those first two touchdown drives, only 6 points the rest of the game. And that's what you would expect from that defense against David Blah. So I think if that secondary cleans it up, they'll be fine. But of course, now you're talking about a Cowboys offense that's better, a Packers quarterback and passing game that's way better. Same with the Chiefs. So they're going to have to be absolutely lights out in order for the Bears to climb back and finish strong this season.
And Connor and I were debating this earlier, and he tried to answer my concern, where it seems to me too often Bears receivers are moving the wrong way on the field. They're moving up the field or laterally rather than down the field. We also saw on a critical third down, Mitchell Trubisky himself decided that he was going to veer off to a side instead of just taking the yards that are in front of you. Connor's hypothesis was that because of the number of curls, the number of digs, the number of hooks that are run, receivers are in that position to be running, coming back to the ball, and it's just a function of the patterns that Mitchell Trubisky is trusted to throw over some others. Do you concur with that hypothesis, Doctor?
You're talking about after they have the ball in their
hands? Yeah, just in general. Maybe it's exacerbated because it happens on punt returns, too, with Tariq Cohen. It just I find myself watching Bears games going, get down the field.
Well, I think Cohen deserves special mention in this conversation. And my Twitter mentions will fill up with this during games, that Cohen just immediately runs to the sideline. I don't have as big a problem with Tariq Cohen doing that as a lot of people, because Tariq Cohen is small. I mean, he is 5'6", and he serves the Bears a lot better if he's healthy and on the field and not necessarily taking shots. There are situations where he's got to get up the field, and he did a little bit better with that over the last couple weeks, but I think you see his tendency is to protect himself and get out of bounds. He's valuable enough to the Bears that it doesn't necessarily bother me. The play with Trubisky scrambling where he had the line to gain and took it to the left was so jarring because on television you have the yellow line there. And I think we forget that these players, they can't see that yellow line. If Mitch could, of course he would have dove for that and gained the first down. He lost awareness of where he was on the field. He admitted that after the game, and it ended up costing them. And that's just something players have to be better at. And then with the receivers, you know, it hasn't stood out to me as much. It's an interesting point. I think in general, we can all agree that the Bears don't have enough run after the catch, enough downfield action, 10-yard gains that become 25-yard gains because of blocking and guys heading that way. I do think it's a function of some of the stick routes that they run that are sort of the bread and butter of their offense, especially against zone coverage where they get to a mark, turn around, make themselves available. Trubisky hits them and they just take these 6 and 7-yard chunks without running afterwards. It would be more interesting if the Bears had, you know, a 6'2" receiver who could run 4.4 and really unlock defenses the way that we saw, let's say, Kenny Galladay do that. I know that's something they're going to have to add. I mean, Kevin White obviously was supposed to fill that role for a long term.
Yeah.
A seventh overall pick who ran 4.39 in the 40, who was 6'3". Like, he had to be that guy. And the Bears still feel it that he didn't become a player. They're going to have to replace him in some way, and that's how their offense is going to get more explosive with some of these bigger chunk plays.
I want to double back to Tariq Cohen just before we let you go here, Rich. I know that the offense and Matt Nagy have had to remake themselves so many times this season. So if the answer to this is, boy, they just had to throw everything out, so be it. But how far off is Matt Nagy from being able to use Tariq Cohen the way he imagined he would be able to use him this year versus the production and deployment that they're actually getting from Tariq Cohen? It just seems like he's this lost man in a season like this that has been so underachieving offensively.
Yeah, I think like with a lot of their problems, everything you could come up with as far as an answer or an explanation, it's probably a little bit of everything. The one thing that stands out to me after that Lions game is the way Anthony Miller was available to Trubisky in one-on-one matchups because on those third downs, the Lions were doubling Allen Robinson. That seemed to me like one of the most obvious examples and one of the few examples this season of the Bears having an option number two when option number one was taken away. Now, I'm not saying that opposing defenses have been bracketing Cohen or doubling him on every play, because I don't think that's the case. And that, to me, is where Nagy had to do a better job of finding ways to get him open. And then there were some times where he's not even used correctly, like running corner routes out of the slot and trying to catch a jump ball against the Eagles. I mean, that's not Tariq Cohen's type of play. So I think Nagy has been obviously uncomfortable without a tight end that can take some attention away from Cohen, without a number two receiving option that can take attention away from him. That's Nagy's challenge. I don't think he has mastered it to even close this season, and that's on him. He's going to have to figure this out. But overall, the Bears need more than just Robinson and Cohen. I think that's very clear, yeah, because Cohen doesn't fit a traditional role. He is that type of joker back or gadget player, and I don't mean that as in a demeaning way, but he just is a specialized piece given his size and skill set. They need a tight end, a U tight end, who can do things to linebackers to open things up for Cohen. They haven't had that. They need a second receiver who's on the field consistently. Maybe Anthony Miller can be that guy over the final four games, and we'll get a better look at how Cohen might be best used if Miller's doing his thing over the final month.
Rich, thank you, sir. Appreciate
Thanks, Rich.
It.
My pleasure, guys. Enjoy the game this week.
We will try. As always, we'll do our best. That is Rich Campbell, who is a regular on our Mondays after Bears games. He of the Chicago Tribune. It's a busy sports night tonight. The Vikings are at the Seahawks for a football game that has Bears context. If you need the Vikings to lose the rest of their game.
Really had to work hard for that one.
It has
Bears context or something. I don't know.
The Hawks are hosting the Blues, and the Bulls are at the Kings. You're going to hear that game on the Score. Rick Camp is doing pregame and postgame.
All right.
Bulls and Kings doing what they do. And
oh, yeah.
Let's go get it. Uh-huh. Yeah. Also, The Cubs have a decision to make by midnight tonight.
That they do. A decision that I think is fairly obvious and clear. Maybe you don't. Tell you what it is, we come back. Also, Matt Nagy's scheduled to speak with reporters at 11:45. We will monitor the microphone at Halas Hall. If he's there on time, you'll hear it here. Bernstein McNight of The Score.
Bottom of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Basketball. Northwestern Basketball hosts number 3 Michigan State at the new Welsh Ryan Arena on December 18th. Tip-off is set for 7 p.m. Tickets to see Chicago's Big Ten team are on sale now at nusports.com. I think midnight tonight is the deadline for baseball teams tendering their ARB-eligible players, and Addison Russell is one.
Yeah, and I would expect him to be non-tendered.
I would, too.
I think that's the expectation. You can, I mean, if you just want to do it with the, you know, the pros and the cons, the pluses and the minuses, the dollar signs attached to them, it's about $5 million you're going to save yourself in a season where you are going to need seemingly every dollar to sign as much pitching as you possibly can. Addison Russell has been a meh with bat for about 3 years now. He's fine defensively, but you've got that Javi Baez fellow over there.
And Nico
gotta
Horner,
find a little bit of depth.
If you think Nico Horner's a major leaguer right now, he's a second baseman.
I think that's probably true. You run out of spots to play Addison Russell, to say nothing of everything that comes with Addison Russell. The
cognitive dissonance.
Franchise-wide effort to try and rehabilitate a guy has been, I don't know what else to say other than impressive. I would not have done it myself. It is impressive to have gone down that path. I would have traded him from the get-go. I would have non-tendered him. I would have released him. You know, all that kind of stuff. I would have moved on. They chose not to, but now comes this, I don't know, natural break point in terms of a baseball ecosystem, and this is when you break. This is when you go.
All their other ARB eligibles, who are Chris Bryant, Javier Baez, Wilson Contreras, Kyle Schwarber, Albert Almora Jr., and Kyle Ryan, are likely to be tendered.
I don't hear any names in there that are non-tenders.
No, but I think this is probably an easy one. I think they already, that Theo Epstein already did far more than expected by committing the amount of franchise resources to the support of his potential rehabilitation and giving him that extra year. And he knew that he was going to face slings and arrows by the decision that he made to tender Russell last year.
Yep.
And that was it. That was his shot to earn it, to prove it. And what did he do? He didn't know the damn signs.
Forgot how many outs there were.
He forgot how many outs there were. He didn't know where he was supposed to be positioned. He didn't know what the steal sign was, what the bunt sign was, and then admitted that he needed to concentrate more on it. I'm done with you.
He wasn't ready. I mean, he didn't make himself ready. In an organization that wanted to, and with a manager that was ready to give as many chances as he possibly could. I mean, God, how many times did Joe Maddon tell the story, whether it was to Lawrence or reporters or whatever it was? Joe Maddon just kept on telling the story of that unnamed Angels prospect that he kept dragging to camps with him and telling him, here, you're not going to hit, you're not going to play, you're just going to run the bases. We are just going to give you an opportunity to run the bases. And he told that story because there was this exasperation around him because some guys, he said, just don't get it. All I could think of was Addison Russell every time he told that story. And I think there was a point in that story. Some guys just aren't going to come with you on this whole trip. Some guys just aren't ready to do it.
They can't see what the team is doing for you. Can't see how far they're going, how far individually you have executive putting themselves out there. What in to counterbalance some of this stuff, to say that every single level of the organization is going to undergo intensive training in understanding domestic violence and awareness and mandatory reporting, all of this, and the amount of time and effort that was put in just because you're good enough at baseball to merit another chance. And then to not make the absolute most of it, it would be very difficult for me to say, well, now you deserve yet another chance. I think they've already given him more than he's deserved.
And that's not even taking the simple bottom line math of it. $5 million for Addison Russell. Let's just ballpark it, right? $5 million for Addison Russell at this point in his career feels a little pricey for this Cubs team. Mm-hmm. Should that be the case? No, probably not. Does it have to be the case?
It's not
Of course it's not.
If we just take them at their word for what they say they have and what they say they want to
do. And that's what I got to do, because baseball is not a capped game. It is de facto capped with the luxury tax. So the budgets that these teams talk about and navigate around are the budgets I hold them to. You know, the essential salary caps that each team is going to roll with. I mean, the fact that, listen, news just came across. Apparently, the Red Sox are going to tender a contract to Jackie Bradley Jr. I'm a little surprised by it, only because of a cost-saving aspect of things.
When they're talking about trading Mookie Betts,
I mean,
right?
Good God, man. The Brewers, for instance, we heard the news today, right? That apparently, Ken Rosenthal is reporting this, apparently the Brewers are ready to take phone calls on Josh Hader. Because they see him as potentially too expensive down the line, that they've got to make some sort of return on a 25-year-old flame-throwing reliever. He's going to be too expensive down the line, that you've got to start eyeing returns now. This is the world of baseball you live in. And if that's the case, whether you're the Brewers looking to deal the unicorn that is Josh Hader, even though the home runs were up last year, and not to get into his issues at all, but you know, you talk about the talent that's there. If that team is looking to move on from that dude at that price, then $5 million from Addison Russell in that environment seems a little bit costly.
What it tells you is that the intention of setting up the luxury tax to function as a self-imposed hard cap is working.
Yeah. Kudos. Congratulations. Right? You did it.
Yeah.
Now, in the next CBA, don't get rolled like you did in the last one. It would be really interesting. It won't happen. But it would be really interesting to see the Players Association going into the next CBA saying, listen, look at all of these payrolls. Look at all of these contracts. Look at how every single one of these teams is operating with the luxury tax. You did it. We don't need it anymore. You did. Mission accomplished. You set the thresholds. Teams lived by the thresholds. And in setting the thresholds, everybody learned what to value players at. We're good. You've made the artificial values on all of us already set.
You're all using the same algorithms.
You did it.
You have it down to the penny. You know what a given player is worth on the open market at any given time.
So take the restrictor plates off, because the logic would follow that everybody's just going to keep on paying players what the system kicks out their worth.
Well, what they're going to tell you is the reason that's never going to happen is because
you can't have a George Steinbrenner come in and throw a whole bunch of money everywhere.
No, it's the opposite.
That guy's not coming around.
It's the opposite. You had people buy teams, buy available teams, because they knew the guarantees of the baseball business. There were owners that knew you could get a small market team, you could spend nothing, you could not really try to win, and have everything subsidized.
And you could boondoggle a town for a $300 billion stadium and then move out like Jeffrey Loria did. Mm-hmm. Easy enough. It's a nice way to turn a paycheck.
Yep, it's a great business to be in, because you cannot lose, and the baseball advance media checks are still coming in. You don't even really have to draw. You don't have to win. You don't have to draw. You just have to have the building and have the franchise, and you're set.
One team has spent money. Yasmani Grandal signed with the White Sox for a franchise high, 4 years and $73 million. They have already made one non-tender decision.
Yolmer.
It hurt us all to see Yolmer get non-tendered. But they've got five others, and of them, Lourie Garcia seems to be the name that comes up most often as far as a non-tender. I just don't think that the White Sox, I mean, I guess they could non-tender Lourie Garcia, but with as many at-bats as you've got to go around right now, I mean, considering...
Well, he's your second baseman until Madrigal comes up, right?
I mean, he plays six different positions. Yeah. You know, he could get you through any portion of the season, injury-prone, and, you know, it's not been as good a hitter as he was 2-3 years ago, but I don't see any reason to have to, you know, essentially cut guys at this point. You've got roster spots. You've got a whole lot of money. You may as well use it and see if you can turn assets into something a little shinier.
Matt Nagy is scheduled to meet the media in just a few moments. As he approaches a microphone, we'll open it up, let you hear what he has to say, if he is on time today. Bernstein and McKnight on the Score.
What makes you think the wins will come?
If you build it, they will come, Joel. Seen that movie?
I have seen it.
He's in the movie, Joel?
Okay. I've seen it.
Why do you do that to me, Campy?
Because you need it. You deserve it.
Maybe I do.
You just need to believe it more. Does he call him Joel
in
there?
No, it's Joe. He says Joey.
Okay.
But, like, what are you doing? And seriously, it is not a well-kept secret that the players think he's insane.
You're right.
they know it. They live with it every day. Think about what it must be like for them to, like, every day they go to practice, they go to shoot around, and they have to be like, ugh. It's bad enough when we play post-game stuff.
Yeah.
Like, they see, like, you know, going crazy on all the sidelines and, like, all this stuff and the punch clock and all that. Like, you wouldn't want to come to work.
You think they're still punching that clock?
Hell no.
I don't think they're punching that clock.
Hell, maybe Arch Diakono.
I
would say Arch is probably still, that's why he's playing 7 minutes of every fourth quarter.
I would love
he's
for
He's playing half of, I mean, more than half.
I want one
more
of the Intrepids to go grab a couple of the punch cards, just take photos, just see the last time they've actually been punched. I want to know.
Oh, that'd be great.
I want to know. This is Zach LaVine hasn't clocked in for 4 weeks.
I would say Ryan Arciacono every day.
And overtime.
Arrival and departure overtime. And maybe
Luke Kornet forgot where the clock was.
Maybe Max Strus is doing it every once in a while just to, you know, put it on there. We thank our rotating college of producers today. We've had Shane Reardon and Rick Camp. And
Adam Studzinski was here.
So nice job, guys.
Yeah,
thanks to Patrick Manley. Thanks to Rich Campbell for joining us. And coming up, we're going to do Transition with Lawrence Holmes. Keep it here on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.